Welcome to the Agency in Focus, NASA, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
While Mars gets much of the publicity these days, NASA actively researches all of the planets in the solar system. Lori Glaze is acting director of the Planetary Science Division at NASA. I asked her if the science is driven by wide differences in the characteristics of each of the planets.
So there are great differences between the different planets in our solar system, and that is the major driver that drives a lot of our curiosity and what we want to understand about what can form such a diversity of planets and environments. All within the same solar system. Just as an example, the rocky planets of Earth and Venus and Mars are each very, very different from each other, presumably forming from similar materials when the solar system was formed, presumably all having water on their surfaces at one point, but then they all changed over time, and now we've got three different planets with very, very different environments at their surfaces.
And yet there are some that are further out that are still mostly gas.
Exactly so. So there are, as you get further out into the solar system, you find the gas giants of Jupiter and Saturn, and then even the ice giants, Uranus and Neptune, each of them very different in their own way. And like I said, a very diverse set of planets that we find in our solar system.
And therefore, does this require many different scientific disciplines, even though everyone in the division that's doing science is looking at planets?
Yes, there's a lot of different disciplines that are required in order to look at the whole picture of planetary science. We have people who study the geology, want to understand the geologic processes on the surfaces of rocky planets. We have individuals who are very interested in atmospheres and how atmospheres form and how they work, the different compositions and dynamics of those atmospheres, looking at a variety of different, the gas giants, their atmospheres and the storms on Jupiter and Saturn. And then we have folks that are interested in the geophysics, the interior structures of each of the planets, or even the magnetospheres way out beyond the outer parts of the atmosphere that we think of above the clouds, magnetic fields that are around the outer part of the atmospheres. And so there's a lot of scientific disciplines involved. A lot of that has to come together to tell a complete story of not just how one planet works, but how you compare one planet to another and understand the similarities and differences between them.
And I guess this is kind of a basic question, but do we think that all the planets in our solar system had the same origin, or do they all maybe just fly by randomly and get stuck to the sun in an orbit?
That's a very interesting question. A lot of the planets, most of the planets formed as part of the early solar nebula, that as our solar system came together and different pieces started to run into each other, they stuck together and started to form the planets. But not everything in our solar system was part of that, and some things flew in from outside. But most of the bodies in the solar system, most of the planets and asteroids are what's left of that early formation.
And within the Planetary Science Division, is there some sort of grand architecture for the research that you do? Is there a fundamental fact that is being pursued in some way by all of the different channels of research?
So most of our research is geared toward really trying to understand the formation of the solar system and the evolution of the solar system. We're also very keyed into trying to understand what types of environments can support or sustain life. And that's a real driving factor. It's not the only thing we look at, but is certainly one of the major drivers right now, trying to understand what types of environments could sustain life. And then if there is actually even still life out there, how would we detect it and how would we deal with that?
Sure. We're speaking with Lori Glaze. She's acting division director for planetary science at NASA. And tell us how the as an organization, it's all set up. How many people are there, and how do you interact with the other pieces of NASA that might be more operational?
NASA is a very, very big organization. The Planetary Science Division at NASA headquarters is a group of perhaps around 50 people who work together in a very integrated fashion to manage things such as our research programs and our missions that we're developing that we want to fly. But the Planetary Science Division is really even much larger than the organization at NASA headquarters. We fund scientists and engineers at a variety of different NASA centers, including Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California, and a variety of other NASA centers across the country. And we also fund a lot of research scientists at universities around the country and other private research organizations. So there really are literally thousands of planetary scientists across the country that are doing planetary science research that's supported by NASA.
That is to say, the Planetary Science Division is largely coordinators, or you also do your own research?
The Planetary Science Division within headquarters is primarily a management and organizational activity, but we do fund a lot of the research that gets done around the country.
And for the research that's done either by your own researchers or the NASA ones or the external ones, what are the sources of data? Because I guess my understanding of planetary science is you're basically studying what probes send back to Earth as data sets.
That's a great question. We use actually a whole bunch of different sources of data in order to do the science that we do in order to understand planets within the solar system. And those sources of data can include ground-based observatories. We use telescopes around the world to observe the various planets and get data on their atmospheres or other characteristics. We use those ground-based telescopes to look at asteroids and comets within the solar system. And then we also use even space-based telescopes, such as the Hubble Space Telescope, that are generally thought of as being astrophysics or astronomy assets. But we use the data from those space telescopes to also look at planets within our solar system, asteroids and comets, and we also use them to look at other planets outside of our solar system, what we call exosolar planets around other stars. And then, of course, as you say, the more traditional data that we think of as planetary science data are the data that come back from our planetary science missions that we fly. So these could be orbiting missions that carry a bunch of instrumentation that can make remote measurements of atmospheres and surfaces of the various planets, or they could be probes that go down and measure chemistry of the atmospheres as they descend, or landers that land on the surface, or even rovers such as the Curiosity rover on Mars that's roving around and telling us lots of great information about the chemistry of the rocks on the surface of Mars.
And if a scientist or the division decides we really need to know more about this in that planet, what does it take until you can get a probe or the instrumentation or the data that you need to study that quality X of that planet? Are you dependent on what NASA's already flying around, or do you have influence on what it will fly to get you the data that you need?
An interesting question. We have a variety of different approaches that we take in order to determine what the next missions are going to be that NASA is going to fly. One of those mechanisms is something we call a decadal survey, where every 10 years we ask the National Academies of Science to make recommendation to us about the highest priority science questions we should be trying to answer. And through that process, they can recommend some of the larger missions that you may hear about come through that process. And so those missions, for example, we're working on the next generation Mars rover that's going to launch in 2020. And we're also working on a mission to fly to Europa, a moon of Jupiter called Europa Clipper. These large missions were recommended through that process, and we've worked to develop those, and they'll be flying soon in the 2020s. But we also have a competitive process where we ask scientists throughout the community to provide proposals to us of different scientific missions and concepts that they'd like to fly, and then we have a very rigorous evaluation process that we go through to select missions through that process. And so those are really creative, innovative ideas that come from within the scientific community that try and address, again, some of these highest priority science questions that we have.
And do you think that the growth in commercial space launch activity could someday increase the capacity to do science beyond what NASA itself can launch?
I absolutely think that the commercial capability has tremendous potential, particularly right now we're thinking about the moon. We have a new initiative that we will be implementing in the coming year to try and jumpstart and get some of these commercial providers up and flying and get them traveling to the moon on a regular basis. And to me, that provides a tremendous opportunity for us to fly scientific experiments to the moon on a regular cadence that lets us start really trying to answer some of our compelling questions that we have.
Sounds like it could also drive down the cost of some of this, too, because NASA tends to do high-value types of launches, and maybe these other parties could do much more frequent but less expensive launches.
That would be the hope, is that those launches would be more frequent and perhaps a little less expensive, and allow us to get us a great return on science investment.
Lori Glaze is acting director of the Planetary Science Division at NASA. In part two of the interview, we learn how Glaze acquired her lifelong curiosity about the warmest planet in the solar system, Venus. I'm Tom Temin.
This year, NASA celebrates its 60th anniversary. That's six decades of important work and reaching new heights.
And we have liftoff.
At Leidos, the team of IT experts, engineers, and scientists that support NASA are exceptionally honored to enable more missions for the offices and directorates that come together to conduct deep space exploration, advance human spaceflight, and encourage the world to think beyond the horizon. See a message from the team at Leidos.com/NASA.
NASA's lead planetary scientist, Lori Glaze, has had a lifelong interest in math and science. In part two of my interview, she explains how to encourage more young people to get into math and science. First, we talk about how one particular interest, geologically related, led to an abiding interest in the planet Venus.
I am a planetary scientist, and my background is really in understanding volcanoes and how they work on all of the different planets. But Venus is a particularly interesting planet because it is covered in volcanic features. And so many years ago, I got very interested in trying to better understand Venus and how it has evolved over time. And I was actually involved in leading several of those competitive proposals to try and develop mission concepts to return to Venus.
So with all those volcanoes, then it's similar to Earth in that it has a molten core, I guess we can assume, or is it still molten?
We assume that it's still molten, and we assume that those volcanoes might still be active on Venus, but actually, to date, we still don't have any definitive evidence that it's still active.
And what about Mars? Venus is on one side of Earth, Mars is on the other,
correct.
And they couldn't be more different. Mars looks cold and barren. Is there volcanic evidence up there, too?
Mars is very cold and certainly looks different and has less atmosphere, but it is actually also covered in volcanic features. Now, we don't think Mars is still volcanically active today, but there are remnants of very, very large volcanoes across the surface of Mars that look very similar to the types of volcanoes we have on Earth. They look a lot like the shield volcanoes that we see in Hawaii, with large lava flows that, again, look very similar to the lava flows we see in Hawaii, just bigger.
And all of this planetary science that has been done over the years, does any of it help understand the Earth itself better?
It does. In fact, we use a lot of comparative techniques in planetary science to help use what we know about the Earth to help us better understand the planets, and then to use the planets to help us better understand the Earth. And one really interesting example of that actually involves Venus, where we were studying Venus and trying to understand some of the chemistry processes going on in the atmosphere, and realized that the chlorine in Venus's atmosphere might be destroying some of the oxygen species, and then wondered, well, would that be happening on Earth? And that was one of the reasons why people went and looked and discovered that there was an ozone hole on Earth.
And I guess we have chlorine leaks once in a while. We should be careful of those, too.
Mm-hmm.
In doing planetary science, what are the tools that scientists use at NASA? Is it just a computer? Or do they have access to supercomputing, or anything specialized?
There's a wide variety of tools that are used in planetary science. Computers are certainly one of those tools. We make a lot of use of computing capabilities. A lot of the data that we get back from satellites and planetary orbiters and planetary missions is a remote sensing data. So that means they're images or the types of data that you have to display and look at and interpret on a computer. So we'd use a lot of computing to interpret the data that we get back. We also use computers for modeling, to use theoretical studies for comparison with the data that we collect. And some of that is regular modeling and regular computing, but we do actually use a lot of supercomputers as well to do some more detailed and really computation-intensive type modeling. In addition to computers, we also use a lot of laboratory work. We do a lot of chemistry modeling and chemistry work in laboratories to understand how different rocks or how different chemical species might interact with each other, again, to help us understand what we're looking at when we look at other planets.
And over the years, has the, when I say computer, I mean the desktop computer that everybody has, those have gotten to be to the point where you can do a lot of scientific work on those that might have been impossible 10 or 20 years ago.
That's correct. Desktop computing has become so incredibly capable that almost every scientist, you know, has a very capable computer on their desk and does most of their work through that desktop computer. They're very, very helpful.
Lori Glaze is acting director of the Planetary Science Division at NASA. I'm Tom Temin.
This year, NASA celebrates its 60th anniversary. That's six decades of important work and reaching new heights.
And we have liftoff.
At Leidos, the team of IT experts, engineers, and scientists that support NASA are exceptionally honored to enable more missions for the offices and directorates that come together to conduct deep space exploration, advance human spaceflight, and encourage the world to think beyond the horizon. See a message from the team at Leidos.com/NASA.
We're speaking with Lori Glaze. She's acting division director for planetary science at NASA. And I wanted to talk about the issue of STEM education leading to the type of work you do, and especially the, I guess you can call it a national imperative to get more girls and young women interested in STEM fields, because there seem to be a lot of your type at NASA.
Yes, I'm really impressed with the concerted effort that NASA has made in really trying to make sure that they have a diversity of thought and opinions at every table and at every level of management within NASA. I was previously at one of the NASA centers at Goddard Space Flight Center, and I've recently come to NASA headquarters. And again, really seeing the number of women in management roles and in higher level roles is very impressive.
So what does it take to get more, not just more girls, but boys also, people into the whole STEM field? Because I guess my theory is we need to teach math in a more compelling way when people are young.
I think you have a good point there about trying to make math more compelling. For me, math was always one of the most exciting subjects, so it was never a question, but I think trying to make it fun and make it interesting to students, make it something that it's not just an exercise of, you know, doing the work and passing the test, but making them, helping them to understand how it is useful in every day and why we need math and why it's so important, would probably go a long way to helping. I think also more than just learning math in isolation is trying to understand why we even have math. You know, when I do my science, math is fundamental to being able to do the science. And it's the science that's so exciting. And science gets kids really jazzed and really excited. And if they understand how the mathematics plays into understanding the science, that may be another way to draw them in and keep them interested.
And for people that have been in science for a few years, like you and your colleagues, how do you keep up with everything that is relevant to the particular branch of science that you are involved with? Because it seems like there's exponential growth in the amount of data and understanding that's produced.
That is true. There is a huge amount of growth and so much new information every day. And it is a challenge to keep up with new developments. But we have, you know, certainly publications that come out, and we try and keep track of what the new results are that are being published in the peer-reviewed literature. And then we also, I like to attend conferences to hear new talks, the breaking news and the new information that's coming out. Keeping an eye on press releases of new science information, that's a great way to identify where the new discoveries are. And then we also have electronic newsletters and things that we use as well to communicate and make sure that we're getting the word out and that we can all stay up with what the most recent and current results are.
International conferences still seem to be a big part of the academic and scientific world. Does NASA provide sufficient funds for people to go to those things?
NASA does provide sufficient funding for attendance at international conferences. NASA really values that interaction that happens between scientists in a face-to-face international conference setting. That is where real science moves forward. Having those discussions and having that dialogue, it's a very, very important part of the scientific method. When someone comes forward with a new idea and having the ability to have that exchange and to talk about those ideas or challenge those ideas, That's what makes science so valuable and worthwhile, is when we have the ability to have that kind of exchange. And so fortunately, NASA is very, very supportive of the international conferences and workshops and a variety of different mechanisms for making sure we have that scientific dialogue.
And if the engineers came to you tomorrow and said, Lori, we have developed a super heat-resistant suit, and we're going to let you wear it, and we're going to take you to Venus, and you've had a couple of days on Venus, what would you do if you could land there?
Wow. If I could land on Venus, what would I do? I would probably go to one of the areas that we think is most likely to be volcanically active and see if I can't get any real evidence that would tell me if it is active today, or how recently it's been active, and what type of volcanism is present on the surface.
Lori Glaze is acting director of the Planetary Science Division at NASA. There's much more to the interview. We'll post it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency in Focus. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus NASA, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency in Focus.
This year, NASA celebrates its 60th anniversary. That's six decades of important work and reaching new heights.
And we have liftoff.
At Leidos, the team of IT experts, engineers, and scientists that support NASA are exceptionally honored to enable more missions for the offices and directorates that come together to conduct deep space exploration, advance human spaceflight, and encourage the world to think beyond the horizon. See a message from the team at Leidos.com/NASA.